It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We uncover the origins of our favorite idioms. These expressions that turn up in conversations or that we encounter in books, we shouldn't take them too literally. So go ahead, break a leg. Call in with your questions for the Oxford Etymologist, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anatoly Liberman is a professor in the Department of German, Nordic, Slavic, and Dutch at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, where he's taught since 1975. He blogs as the Oxford Etymologist, and his new book is called Take My Word for It, A Dictionary of English Idioms. Anatoly, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be with you.
Is it possible to know how many English idioms there are? How many are out there?
No, there's no hope. It's just like asking how many words there are or how many grains of sand there are on a beach. This is an open list. There are more and more idioms every day, and there are hundreds of which of idioms that have never been recorded. So unfortunately, no math works for this topic.
But you have pursued them doggedly. You love them. What do you love about idioms?
Well, I learn a lot about idioms, and I perceive doggedly, as you said, because even though the final number is impossible to determine, one can always do at least something with the material at hand. And I have looked at hundreds and thousands of idioms and thousands of words and selected those which seem to be especially interesting and controversial. Not every idiom is worthy of discussion. For example, if you say make hay before the sun shines, that's a very good piece of advice and nobody will contest it, but there is nothing to say about it except for the fact that yes, make hay before the sun shines. And I have a book of idioms which are controversial, whose origin very few people know, and that is why it's a very finite list. There are about 1,000, a bit over 1,000 idioms in my book. And one can, of course, write a book about another 1,000 and another 1,000, but what I have selected is pretty representative.
Well, I think you used the, it's based on limited corpus, that, you know, no claim there to completeness, but how did you decide which ones to include in the book and which ones to leave out?
Well, that's to a certain extent personal. For very many years, I have been working on a dictionary of English, a new dictionary of English etymology, of word origins. I'm explaining what etymology is, because all over the world, people confuse etymology and entomology. And I keep explaining to them that I'm an entomologist only when there is a bug in my computer. Other than that, I'm an etymologist. Well, anyway, I have been working on this project for decades, and I have looked through thousands of pages which discuss the origin of English words and English idioms. So I have a certain corpus or a database, if you want, and my database limits me to a certain extent. So I have that ocean of idioms and words at my disposal. And then I scoop up something that seems especially interesting and something that has been discussed many times and something that people have been asking questions forever and ever and still don't know what the answer is. So in a way, this is a dictionary of controversial origins. And I didn't try to do more than I could. And that is a very indefinite answer to your very definite question.
Talking about idioms and where they come from with University of Minnesota Twin Cities professor Anatoly Liberman has a new book. You can join in on idioms along the way, the ones that come up in your speech, maybe you've seen in books. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anatoly, let's get down to business. What is the origin of the common expression, "It's raining cats and dogs"?
If you have looked at my book, and of course there is no if, I know that you have even read the book because you sent me a whole list of questions about it. You know that this is one of the most controversial idioms in the world. And if someone opens my book, you will see probably two pages, if not more, about raining cats and dogs. And instead of giving you a very clear answer right away, I'll tell you something that people should know about such idioms. People try to invent origins. That is, they will ask questions and answer them to them to their own satisfaction, saying, "Well, perhaps it's about cats and dogs. Cats walk so in such and such a way in our houses, and that is probably how it is." And all these ideas are not only iffy, but usually totally ungrounded. I have opened the book and see that there are almost, yes, a page and a half about it. And the discussion runs from, in my database, from 1903 to 1926. Instead of telling you how many people tried to decipher this idiom and how many really improbable and impossible answers have been given, let me tell you something which is probably more important to your listeners. Don't try to invent an etymology. Don't try to say something that has simply occurred to you, because that's probably wrong. And especially wrong if you have heard this explanation from someone. And one thing is especially important. People are very fond of referring to old Scandinavian mythology. Now, we know old Scandinavian mythology very well indeed. And people would say, that is, I'm quoting from my database and from the printed book, they will say, "Oh yes, that is because Odin had dogs, and Odin, that's the usual pronunciation of the Scandinavian god in English, Odin was a weather god, and his dogs, of course, reigning Odin's dogs. And then there was a goddess called Freya, and Freya had many cats. All right, let us now have them all in one room, Odin and Freya, and that's reigning cats and dogs." That's absolute nonsense. Odin never had dogs. He was not a weather god, and Freya's cats have nothing to do with it. So the main thing, try to avoid all kinds of nonsensical explanations. Hmm. Whether there is a good explanation or not is hard to tell, but it's probably something that goes back to a game, and it will take too much of our time if I read the whole explanation. Let me say that in general, very many of our idioms, some of them transparent and some of them not, go back to sports. And cats and dogs in this idiom are not cats and dogs, but probably some implements in a ball game. And if you want to know the whole answer, well, you open and read it there.
I want to bring up that I was doing some nighttime reading last night with my twins, and we were reading a popular series, Judy Moody book, and there it was. You know, there was the idiom, you know, cats and dogs. And I'm just wondering how it struck me. I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about teaching idioms to children or passing them along?
I have never taught idioms to children. I have taught words and idioms only part of it. Children very seldom ask questions about origins. They take the world as it exists, as it is. And if something is called a cat or a pussy, that's the way it is called. Only when they begin to study and learn something about etymology and learn that there is a problem, they're usually quite interested in the subject and amused. It's a very good and thankful subject. When you come to a group of children, by children I mean someone, let us say, between 10 and 12, and begin to tell them about idioms, they're grateful, they laugh, they can hardly believe what they hear, but it's much easier than to teach them real etymology, that is the history and the origin of words. Because you know, to know the history of a word, you have to know a lot of linguistic algebra, how sounds change, what grammatical forms there are, and so on. And when you are speaking about idioms, about cats and dogs, or about anything, there is really no problem. You tell them about some realities, about a ball game, and everybody understands. It's one of the best subjects to discuss in a group of any age.
University of Minnesota linguist Anatoly Liberman with us, helping us understand our ever-evolving English and the origins of idioms we hold dear. Join in with your questions about expressions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Idioms, they're all around us. We learn about them now with you, University of Minnesota professor and linguist Anatoly Liberman. The new book is called Take My Word for It. Let's go to the phones now. Vicki in Milwaukee. Vicki, hi.
Hi.
What would you like to bring up?
I was talking to a client about two different equal options and said they were a horse apiece. And she had no idea what I was talking about and asked me to explain what I meant. And she's from California. And I looked it up and heard that might be local to the Midwest or maybe even just to Wisconsin. And I was curious about that saying and other local idioms.
Vicki, thank you. A horse apiece, Anatoly.
I have never heard this idiom have nothing in my book on it. But I understand that the question comes from California, and there are hundreds of local expressions of this type, which are very hard to explain unless you live there, and even if you live there, you don't know where the origin is. There was a man at one time who, unfortunately, he's dead, has been dead for many years, Peter Tammany, who studied just this kind of stuff, the origin of Californian expressions. And all that he has done, I know, because I have it all in my database. I never heard that idiom. But let me give you just one piece of advice to a listener. There is a beautiful dictionary called Dictionary of American Regional English. And it is online, though, of course, you have to subscribe to it. And you can try to look it up there under horse or under any keyword. And if you have any luck, there will be an explanation there. That is the same problem that I confronted while putting together my book. There are expressions used in Shropshire, in Lancashire, in anywhere in Yorkshire, and nobody knows where it came from. So somebody will write a letter to a journal or to a periodical, does anyone know the origin of this expression? And there will be no answer. These are the toughest questions about idioms. And the same is true about local words. You hear some words which are never used outside a certain community, and nobody knows where they came from.
Let's go to.
I'm sorry that it's so disappointing. This is probably the same thing. I'm sure that you will shower it with questions. And in all cases, I'll have to wriggle out of the answers instead of giving real answers. That's because the origin of these expressions is not known, and not in my database and nowhere. But if they're very local, try the Dictionary of American Regional English. It's a treasure trove of such words and idioms.
We'll stick with you nonetheless, Anatoly. Let's go to Shauna in Milwaukee. Shauna, hi.
Hi, good morning, Kate. Good morning, Professor. My question is, in all of your study, Professor, in regards to idioms, what is the most interesting or unusual idiom and its etymology that you've encountered?
I have been often asked the same question about words. What is your favorite word? What is your problematic words? And so on. I'll answer your question in two ways. I have discovered the etymology, that is, I myself, and not simply summing up what everybody else said, I have discovered the etymology of only one idiom. And this is not a great victory because it's an idiom that nobody knows. So this is really a hidden treasure. There is an expression to lie doggo, which means to keep one's peace and try not to be seen. And nobody knew the origin of this strange and probably obsolete expression. And I happened to discover it almost by chance. It's my favorite idiom because it's my own child. That's one reason. And then there are certain expressions which are my favorite because all of a sudden it turned out that what looked like absolutely obscure is not quite obscure, that there is a good answer. For example, raining cats and dogs, was to a certain extent a revelation. Another was by hook or by crook. You cannot imagine the amount of nonsense said about hook and crook.
Which is the saying, by any means necessary. What are the theories behind this idiom?
By hook or by crook, the main piece of nonsense, and I'll be very short about it, was that so many people believed that there were some two men, Mr. Hook and Mr. Crook, and all kinds of apocryphal stories have been invented that there were two judges, Mr. Hook and Mr. Crook, two ferrymen, Mr. Hook and Mr. Crook, or after the fire of London, there were two constructors, Mr. Hook and Mr. Crook. All that is absolute nonsense. Hook and Crook were probably parts of the debris, forest debris, not the hook and the crook, but that there was a lot of branches and people managed to pick up that debris by hook or by crook. So it's a medieval expression. And when I read that explanation, I really felt enlightened. So answering your question, your listener, this is one of my favorite expressions, not because there is something so special about it, but because after years and years of stupid answers, somebody answered it correctly, and I was truly enlightened and pleased.
Talking about idioms with University of Minnesota Twin Cities professor Anatoly Liberman. You can join in along the way, 800-642-1234. Anatoly, we heard from Sharon in Minocqua, said their favorite idiom or phrase is a Hawaiian phrase, dakain. And Sharon said it's a placeholder for a thing I can't remember. An example would be the dakain car that the person drives. I want one of those. Sharon said this is specific to Hawaii and used all the time there, and wonders how common are regional idioms like this.
Well, there are thousands of them. And somebody said once, using the obsolete word trot, which means an old woman. I think it's a dialectal British word that very few people understand. And it was said more than 100 years ago. There are hundreds of unrecorded sayings that old trots still know. And that is absolutely true. But there are also hundreds of recorded sayings like a Hawaiian expression that you have just referred to. And those local expressions are very familiar to me because that's exactly the material with which I have been working. As I said, somebody from Lancashire would say, we here in our region say this, this, and this. Where could it come from? Somebody else from Lancashire would suggest something. And there is a beautiful journal, there's a beautiful journal called Notes and Queries. And there were local journals called Lancashire Notes and Queries, Cornwall Notes and Queries, and so on. And people tried to answer these questions and couldn't. And sometimes they could. I know that it's very bad to cough when you're speaking.
No, take your time. Don't worry. Take your time.
And you cannot edit it out, but I think your listeners will forgive me for that. In any case, local expressions sometimes are born in one family, which is not unusual. Then the neighbors of this family begin to like it and use it too. And then more people begin to use this expression. And then nobody knows where it comes from. And even if they know that this appeared in this family, even this family doesn't know why. They say, well, my grandparents used this expression and it's all lost. In most cases, the origin of such idioms cannot be explained. And that's a very sad statement. But then that's the same thing with words. When you look up the origin of words, very often your dictionary says something you don't expect. Origin unknown.
Let's pause right there with Anatoly Liberman, professor in the Department of German, Nordic, Slavic, and Dutch at the University of Minnesota. We'll pick this up. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore idioms in the English language and the stories behind them with University of Minnesota professor and linguist Anatoly Liberman, who calls language the most mysterious tool we use. Join a conversation by calling about the idioms you love, the ones you hate, your questions welcome along the way, 800-642-1234. Anatoly's new book is A Dictionary of English Idioms, and he stays with us. So the idiom cleanliness next to godliness, it comes up in the animated film Ratatouille in 2007, and in the movie, Remy the Rat, oh, I love this part, is explaining the idiom to his fellow rats.
That's right. Cleanerific. Poison checker. Cleanerino. Close to godliness, which means clean. You know, cleanliness is close to... Never mind. Move on.
Anatoly, let's fill that in. Cleanliness next to godliness. Can you tell us about it?
Yes, by chance, this one, as you remember, is in my book. The chance that your listeners ask me about something that is in my book is relatively small, but this one is here, and I can, if you don't mind, it's a very short one, and I can even read what is here. First of all, there is some sort of gloss, but if you look at my book, you will see that people have been discussing it for years. The first citation that I have in my database goes back to 1863, and the latest to 1940. So for a whole century, people have been wondering about this expression. The meaning seems to be more or less obvious. If your body is clean, your soul will be pure. But the correspondents discuss the examples illustrating the phrase and its relevance. And there is nothing much to say except one note, which is curious and which shows what people usually say about such things. An old woman used this saying to explain why the Saturday night's tub washing should precede the Sunday morning's appearance at church. this is a hilarious explanation. But in an old book, which purports to explain the origin of so many idioms, this is what we read. Something similar is found in the Talmud, he said, and Plutarch tells us that amongst the ancient Egyptians, health was no less respected than devotion. A Jewish lecturer on December 3rd, 1878, reported in the Jewish world, this is a well-known phrase, had been taught by the rabbins of the Talmud many centuries ago, both as a religious principle and a sanitary law. So as you see, a lot of this discussion has nothing to do with the wording, but rather with the circumstances that gave rise to a certain saying. And that's a very common thing.
I think it's so interesting how I learned how you see these biblical references overlapping with the literature, with the literary canon. And I think that really stood out to me once I got to At Sixes and Sevens and how you see the mix of Chaucer with the Book of Job. Is that common to see the merging and the mixing of biblical with literary, with literature.
Very, very common indeed. And your listeners and you, of course, may know that there is a phrase, familiar quotation. There is a dictionary of familiar quotations. You want to know who said to be or not to be. You open your dictionary and you find that it is from Hamlet. But that is, of course, a phrase that practically everybody knows. And this is not the most typical example. But if you open that dictionary, you found that there are thousands of such phrases. Most of them are not known to the general public. Something from the Bible, something from Chaucer, something from Shakespeare or Byron or any modern author. Very many familiar quotations. That is, some good and clever phrases used by an author have become proverbs. And there is no way of distinguishing in theory from between a popular saying or something that was launched by an author. After all, every idiom and every word was coined or invented by somebody. And then this, if it was a good invention, it became popular, and then the origin is forgotten. And that's how it happens if you took any word or any idiom. So there is no line, really, that separates familiar quotations from just idioms. And the same is true not only of familiar quotations, but of proverbs. I decided not to include any proverbs, because of those there are thousands and thousands. The word idiom is rather vague. Everything that is a phrase known to the community, and you have thousands of them.
A very wide net. Talking about idioms with University of Minnesota Twin Cities etymologist Anatoly Liberman, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Anatoly, how do you handle idioms rooted in racist or sexist thinking?
Well, I try to stay away from them if possible. One thing that I can say is that my database is not very modern. Today, as someone who wants to write a dictionary of idioms, somebody like myself, has to compete with the internet. On the internet, you can find practically anything. You want to know the origin of some more or less popular expression. It may not even be popular. It may be even a Hawaiian expression, or an expression that is used somewhere around eastern Wisconsin, and you search for it, and in most cases you find something. So I had to compete with the internet, and I didn't want to fill my book with answers that can be found on the net, and that is a very important thing. Now, sex is everywhere, absolutely all over the place, and I try to stay away from opprobrious phrases, of course. And especially since I depend on my database, I used only those which had to be explained. For example, misogynistic phrases, of which there are tons. And I decided to include one simply to show that such phrases exist. They are like weather sayings, like make hay before the sun shines, something that I quoted at the beginning of our talk. One can fill a volume with such phrases. I stayed away from them. There is very little to explain about them. They are usually transparent, and my dictionary is about things which are not transparent. So if someone wants to have a lot of sexual innuendos in my book, that's a wrong source.
What are the origins of rule of thumb?
For the rule of thumb, I have an entry, and indeed, it's a very good expression, and it only shows that even such a very common expression may be enigmatic. And if you don't mind, I'll simply sum up what I have here. We all know what the rule of thumb is, and what is not clear is what the thumb has to do. Strangely, very few entries in my database, but that is there are all kinds of stories that circulate, and something depends on the nail, on the thumb. Another suggestion sounds more realistic to me. Let me read this explanation, and let me say that there is nothing that is absolutely final in etymology. One can have a very good explanation, and that's where one is. And then somebody may think of a better explanation, and then that's it. This is the best one that I have found. Among country laborers whose hands and fingers are enlarged by griping their tools hard at work, I have often seen the measure of length roughly taken where no other means were at hand in this way. Somebody will very knowingly place the thumb close and firm on the surface of the thing to be measured, then his other thumb in front of the first, and so on, alternately from one end to the other. "There," he says, "there's so many inches, my thumb will just cover the inch." Rule of thumb means, therefore, a rough management. In one of the best dictionaries published, Dictionaries of Idioms published by Allen, he cites more explanations, which are totally improbable, and very wisely says, "Don't believe them." A great American folklorist invented the word fake lore to compete with folk lore. Today, fake is so common that no one even smiles, but at that time it was a novelty. So that is probably the best that can be said. That is probably how the expression came into being. But let me repeat, no etymology is final. There are only good etymologies and bad etymologies. And this is a good explanation. If someone finds a better one, go ahead.
I think I wonder then, you mentioned that the Oxford English Dictionary refrains from suggesting origins of idioms. Why is that?
Well, the Oxford English Dictionary is a treasure house, and it tries to include everything and to satisfy everybody, especially because the Oxford English Dictionary, or the usual abbreviation that so many people know, is the OED. The OED is now online, though you have to subscribe to it. And that means that its database increases every day, every week, every month. And most of the expressions that I have dealt with are there, because if you open such a wonderful dictionary as the OED, you explain to find an answer. So why not by hook or by crook? Why not the rule of thumb or something like that? And they explain, they give, they cite, include idioms. They're very careful, because there are wise people there. They're very careful about the origin of idioms. But they give us something that is precious. They give the early date. Of course, the earliest date means the earliest date when this expression, this idiom, appeared in print, which doesn't mean that that is the year in which it was coined, just the other way around. If it is in print, it must have been coined earlier, of course, by definition. But they will say this is a very early expression, and most expressions, most idioms, are not very old. Surprisingly, some of them were coined in the 18th century, in the 19th century, even in the 20th century. So you very often know that your idea is wrong if you think it's medieval, but it appeared only in the 20th century. Apparently your explanation is nonsense. And so you have this, and very carefully sometimes say, that seems to be the best explanation there is. But in most cases, there is nothing at all. And in my dictionary, I'm very proud, I have several hundred idioms not included in the OED. And there is an asterisk near this idiom in my book. And I hope that perhaps even the great OED will use my book for enlarging their database. And that's the greatest reward any dictionary can have while working.
Anatoly Liberman, etymology professor, word detective, right? At the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, blogs at the Oxford Etymologist, new book called Take My Word for It. Call in with your questions, your stories about popular expressions, what comes to mind, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What an absolute pleasure to be in conversation with Anatoly Liberman, who has taught etymology at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities for nearly 50 years. He calls his new book on idioms a modest monument to human curiosity and a record of people's interest in language. Join in your questions, idioms, 800-642-1234. Christina is here in Solon Springs. Christina, hi.
Hello. Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm born in Germany and I was always interested in language and how it unfolds and what it says. So when I came to the United States, I had to tackle all kinds of weird expressions. And I was wondering, amongst all this, is where does the expression come from and how long do we use it? I'm eyeballing it.
The expression, I'm eyeballing it. Anatoly, insights there?
Yes, that's not new to me. That's not really an expression. You can look it up, the verb eyeball. In the OED, you will find that an eyeball is a noun or a verb. And under the verb, you will find that eyeballing is looking intently at something. That's all there is to it. But since your listener was born in Germany, I can say one thing, and also in connection with your question about that's the cheese. There are some expressions which are international and are the result of some either of boring or of a joke. For example, that's the cheese. Comes from India. Of course, the English, the British, were in India for a long time. And it was a hybrid joke. Cheese in Urdu, I think, means thing. And instead of saying that's the thing, they said, that was a joke, that's the thing, that's the cheese. Only they understood it. And that is probably a correct explanation. But sometimes, since your listener was born in Germany, she will understand it, I find things which are much more mysterious. For example, in Cockney, in London, or probably outside London too, I found an expression which amuses me, that gets on my wick, and which means it irritates me. And there is almost the same word-for-word expression in German, which means the same. And I wonder whether it is a borrowing from German or whether the Germans borrowed it from some inventive Englishman. Such expressions going across the border are not very rare. Though the cheese really takes the cake, if you allow me to use another culinary expression.
Christina, do you have any insights there on that gets in my wick?
No.
Okay.
but I, what over the 27 years I am in the United States by now, I found how much those sayings or those expressions actually define the mentality or the culture. Do you have any insight? So you said there are some expressions they cross the borders, but there are some expressions I've never heard somewhere else. For example, one is it always puzzled me that it's raining cats and dogs.
Yeah, cats and dogs. And as to the, as geht mir auf den Wecker, it's almost the same Cockney expression, and it cannot be a coincidence, but you're absolutely right that expressions, all kinds of idioms, are a wonderful way of looking at the mentality of speakers, because they reflect customs and mores and tell us so much about the way people look at the world, good ways and bad ways. Words are more neutral because they're isolated units, but idioms tell us a lot about the way people think of life and things in general.
Christina, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Jim now in Turtle Lake. Jim, what's one you want to bring up?
Well, I'm an old guy now. I used to live in Alaska, and I wonder if you ever heard the idiom, crazier than an outhouse rat. The old guys used to say that if somebody had some outlandish idea to getting something done, or the person themselves of the idea, they just go, well, that's just crazier than an outhouse rat. They would use a more graphic expression than that, but I wonder if you ever heard that.
Anatoly?
Could you repeat the expression?
Crazier than an outhouse rat.
Yes, so I heard it correctly. I wasn't quite sure. There are many expressions about rats, and this is not really an idiom, but some sort of simile, and there are very few true explanations about them. Somebody said that, not a very great saying, as you heard, and somebody smiled and continued using it. There is nothing to say about it. The expression says what it says, and there is probably no deep meaning there. The origin would mean trying to find who coined it. That's an absolutely hopeless thing.
Anatoly, we only have a few seconds left, but what are your goals next on idioms?
Well, my goal is, of course, to enlarge my database. The database is an omnivorous eater. You constantly work on it and add and add and add forever. And if I find more, I'll add them to my database, and then I'll have a second edition of the book. And that's how it always is. You never stop.
Anatoly, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It has been really a pleasure talking to you and answering questions from your listeners.
Anatoly Liverman, professor in the Department of German, Nordic, Slavic, and Dutch at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. The book is Take My Word for It. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.